Ohayou gozaimasu, konnichiwa, konbanwa. For whenever you're listening to the Joshi Pod, your weekly podcast about the world of Japanese women's wrestling. Joshi Wrestling! I'm your host, Eric Howard, coming to you from very hot San Diego, California. It's about 7:30 a.m. and it's already 90 plus degrees outside. Recording this on a Sunday morning. I apologize for the delayed episode this week. I've been dealing with some personal issues, I'll stick with personal issues. Just struggling a little bit this week, but it's been a heavy week. We lost Casey from Squared Circle Sirens, who was obviously one of my resources I always use for this show, and pretty tough loss for the wrestling journalism community, whatever you want to call it, especially the super niche Joshi wrestling community. We also celebrated Hanakamura's birthday this week, and guys, order that t-shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees. I ordered mine already. Kyoko Kimura, Hana's mom, put a t-shirt out on Pro Wrestling Tees, which I think is amazing. I'm encouraging many of the Joshi wrestlers to do that. I'm trying to help them, some of them, with the contract language. If anybody can help translate that, please let me know, because some of them are interested. They just want to know what they're signing before they sign it. I don't have quite the people to translate the legalese, so it stays, you know, I don't want to dupe them or make them feel uncomfortable into signing something. I'm not trying to get a penny from anybody either, guys. I'm just trying to, selfishly, I just want some t-shirts from some of these people. Kyoko has that t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees right now, which is amazing. I can't wait for mine to come in. I got the email that says it shipped, so I'm super excited for that. And Kenny Omega wore one on Dynamite, which was awesome as well. Again, I'll put a link for the show on the show notes for where you can purchase that. They have a promo going on right now too, and if you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday in the US, they have a promo going on right now too as well for that. Do that if you can. And then last night I read on Twitter that Shuri Kondo's mother had passed away. Very young woman, less than 60 years old. Losing a parent, I feel guilty because I still have both of my parents, but my parents' health, my parents' mortality is on my mind a lot, and I can only imagine what she's going through right now as far as losing a parent. Let's let her have her privacy, but let's send her love and support and positive vibes. I'm very much a believer in positive vibes. Shuri's a biracial woman. Her mother is Filipino. Her father's Japanese. And let's dedicate this show to her, because it just so happens the person I'm interviewing this week is Crystal, the queen of Philippines wrestling. So it's timely that we have a Filipino wrestler on this week. And again, best wishes, love, support, everything to Shuri Kondo. One thing I dwell on probably too much is my parents' mortality, my parents' lives. Just hearing about this sucks, man. And I know some of you guys have already gone through that, so, and have lost parents. So I feel, again, kind of guilty that both my parents are in their late 70s, and I still have them both, and I appreciate them both. And I'm going to go see him today. We're going to go drive to LA today to go have lunch somewhere and do carry out and just sit in the car and eat and talk and stuff. So it's going to mean a little bit more today because of this news. Let me gain my composure real quick. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for being patient with us. We got some pretty cool stuff coming up in the next few weeks. And again, this episode dedicated to Shuri's mother. And send her positive vibes. We can all believe in positive vibes and positivity. So we'll talk to you guys next week. Arigato gozaimasu. Hey guys, Eric back here at the Joshi Pod, and very excited to have somebody I saw about a year ago at Ichigaya Chocolate Square. That was the trip that inspired the invention of the Joshi Pod. The queen of Philippines wrestling, Crystal, welcome to the Joshi Pod.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm very thankful to have you on the show. And yeah, it was about a year ago that I saw you at Ichigaya Chocolate Square. How crazy is that? It's almost been a year.
I know. I'm sorry, it took a year. So, can we try to schedule like a podcast sometime like a few months ago, but time wasn't on my side at the time. So yeah, I think I was having work stuff and then wrestling stuff, and then I was traveling, and then like my schedule was just like back to back. And it, like, there was like one free day that I had, but also that one free day I just wanted to like,
yeah,
Netflix. And it's like, you know, when you're traveling and then you have like one day free and then the next day you have work, and then you're just like, I just want to lay down in bed and watch Netflix.
Yeah, and do nothing, basically just relax. Yeah. No, I'm excited to have you on here because I'd never been to Ichigaya, and I didn't know what to expect, and it was a pretty special day for me. It was, I tell the story quite often about how I was treated so well there at Ichigaya that I wanted to tell the world about it, and that's why I started the podcast. It was to tell the world about Gato Move.
Which is honestly such an amazing thing for you to do, and honestly, Gato Move is so underrated. I feel like they deserve so much, because for women to be able to wrestle on a mat in such like a little space, but so creatively, like what they can do in that little, you know, mat that they had, and like that little room alone, it's like honestly mind-blowing to me. Like I think I saw May like hanging from like the ceiling recently.
Yeah.
And then I think Chris Brooks, was it? He was, he was hitting me with like a floaty, basically. And I was just like,
"Where can you see this? It's a human pinata.
Where else can you see this? You know, it's just in Gato Move. Honestly, they're amazing."
So you got a different experience there, because you got to actually train with them and live with them for a while. How did that come about? How did that come about for you to go to Japan and train with them?
It was March of last year that I had like a match with Sakura-san.
In the Philippines?
In the Philippines. So before that, I met Sakura in Thailand, but we were just like very casual, very hello, nice to meet you. And then when she came to the Philippines, we turned her around and like we had a match together. And I think just like a shot at something, I said like to Sakura-san and Maza-san, I said like, my dream is to go to Japan and wrestle in Japan. And they were like, what? Your dream is to go to Japan? And then they basically like at that spot, like they were saying like, oh, maybe we can invite Crystal. Like, I know they were speaking Japanese, but like I felt like, from the context, also because like I'm a huge anime fan, like I know some words, so like I understood to a point that I think they're actually like considering bringing me to Japan and have a show like with Gato Move and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh my god. And then like later in the same night, they said like, oh, hey, Crystal, we'll bring you to Japan. And I was just like, oh my god, I'm freaking out. I was just freaking out, and I was dancing on the street, and I was like, my friends were looking at me like, Crystal, calm down. We get it, you're going to Japan, but you're gonna get hit in the car. Oh my god. And I was just like, I was just freaking out, like, because you know, for a wrestler, for any wrestler, it's like, it's always gonna be a dream to go to Japan or WWE or AEW, like the big league, because Japan is such well known for their wrestling. Because, you know, it's a sport there. And for every wrestler, it's like a dream to go to Japan. And that was also my dream. And I was just freaking out that they actually brought me to Japan. And I was actually supposed to go earlier in July, I think. Or was it September? I think it was like for June or July. But it was supposed to be for Riho's farewell, like, big event. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to wrestle there. but I couldn't make it because at the time that I was fixing my China visa, it was at the time that it was like the Japan trip was 2 weeks away. So I was fixing my visa with China, and then I was going to fix my visa with Japan. And then my passport was late from China. Henceforth, it was like a, you know, ripple effect. Like my passport, I got my passport late from the Chinese embassy. And then I couldn't pass my passport in time for my Japan trip. So my passport was late when I got my visa. So basically, like, I couldn't go there. And then they were like, I told Sakura-san and Fumi. Fumi was basically like our mediator.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, like, Fumi, oh, hey, I got my visa. It's going to expire on October, something, something. And I was just like, maybe I can go before it expires. And Sakura-san was like, sure, we'd love to have you. And since you got it, you already spent for it. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
we'll have you over for a week and a half or two, like almost 2 weeks over there. It was just like such a whirlwind, like, you know, for me, just as like saying like my dream is to go to Japan, and then they invited me to go to Japan, and I was just like, ah.
So, okay, I like to talk because I talk to a lot of the women from America or from England that go to Japan. So from a young lady from the Philippines that went to Japan, who met you at the airport?
Actually, oh my God, I want to tell that story. I want to tell it so badly. Okay. Sorry, I'm so excited because this is going to be first time I'm going to be able to tell the story. It was like the time I got to Japan, it was the same time, like, a typhoon just hit Japan.
Of course, yeah.
So, like, you know, the roads were, like, I think you remember that, like, when you were in Japan, there was a typhoon.
Yep.
Like, some roads were blocked, some trains couldn't function. So, basically, I got to Japan, and then everything was, like, backed up. There were no transportation. And then May was already, like, on the bus, so when I got off of immigration, she was about to arrive, and it was actually really bad because there was a lot of people, like thousands of people scattered throughout the airport. So like the internet wasn't really the best because, you know, everyone's connected to the internet. All the foreigners who don't have, you know, data, or they do have data, but like, yeah, basically internet was very slow. You can get connected for like 5 minutes and then it would disconnect, and then you need to try to connect again. So it was like a trouble finding May. So when I finally found May, I gave her like, even though it was like a first time meeting, I gave her like a big hug, and I was like, May, I finally get to meet you and see you. And I was like, you know, stranded in an airport with a lot of people with like all my luggage. And I'm just like, I'm like, you know, I don't know what to do because like the trains have stopped. All the buses that were working have already, like, it was already past the time. Like, basically, we're all closed. I think it was, like, around 11 p.m. already. Yeah. And then me and May were stuck at the airport for, like, a good hour and a half or two. And then everyone was, like, all the places were closed. The only places that were open, because it was, like, late at night. It was, like, 12. And then the only places were open was, like, 7-Eleven. And because 7-Eleven line, imagine, like, thousands of people. Like, the 7-Eleven line was just, like, around the block. The checkout line. Like, you can buy some, like, you can get stuff. There's still a tiny bit of stuff left, like, you know, crackers and stuff. But that's really it. And there's instant noodles, but really, like, you don't really want to eat instant noodles at that time of the morning. So I was stranded. People were, like, hungry. And then there were, like, apparently there were people there who have been stuck for, like, 6 hours, eight hours. A lot of people have, like, made, like, little tiny camping sites on like the charger ports. Like, you see any charging area, you will see a person like lay down a blanket or laying on their jacket or something, and they're just charging, you know. So like, also my phone was gonna die, and I was thankful that I had May. And so we basically, like, we went with a couple of people. Like, there were some of them that were Japanese, from Taiwan, another guy from the Philippines, and like all of us just gathered together. And then from different, like, there were just different people gathered together, and they were like, can we please stay here? Because like one of them had an extension cord with like basically they plugged in their extension cord, so like a lot of people could use, like there were like 5 outlets that they can plug into, so like, people were just like there, and they were so nice to us, and they were like, oh hey, you guys haven't eaten yet, so here are some like crackers from my airline that they gave, like here's some extra water too. And everyone was just so nice, and I was just like, that was my first night in Japan. And I couldn't, like, I wanted to go back to the, like, the dormitory, like the Gatumu dorm where May stays basically, and then I just wanted to lay down and like, you know, chill, because like before coming to Japan I just came from China, so like I got home from China, I had like a 12-hour, like not even 12, like it just a 10-hour timeline of just me. I needed to sleep a bit, pack then pack again, and then go to the airport to go to Japan. And when I got to Japan, I just wanted to chill, you know. But then that whole typhoon happened, and then at like I think 1 a.m even Sakura-san was like freaking out, oh no, what are we gonna do? So Sakura-san found, you know, someone from like a friend or a got to move contact that has a car, because like people don't really have cars in Japan. Not everyone has cars, because they have amazing transportation, like their trains are always on time, you know. So like they have a lot of trains, a lot of people bike, but no one really has a lot of cars. So
no jeepneys in Tokyo either.
So basically cars were like a luxury for Japan. It's not really a luxury. I know a lot of people can afford it, but like they don't need it because like they have good trains. So we found the car. And then they drove, like, I think an hour to the airport, because it's not near. I think it was an hour and a half by car. And then Sakura-san got there. She gave me, like, the biggest hug. I'm so sorry. Like, she said, like, Crystal, I'm so sorry for this trouble. At least you're here now with us. And I was like, it's okay, Sakura-san. You didn't expect this. I didn't expect this. And I was just like, that was my first night in Japan. So the next day, I had a match. It was my debut match the next day in Japan.
Was it at Ichigaya?
That was the one in the first ring, I think.
Oh, Shinkiba, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, like, that was, like, the bigger show, because, like, that one was with the ring and the bigger audience. And I was, like, I slept in, I woke up. I still felt groggy because, like, you know how when you travel, like, your body feels different? Like, when you're sitting in a position on the airplane for so long, your neck gets stiff, your back doesn't get stretched out, your legs are just, like, you know, crunched in. And I was just, like, I'm so uncomfortable, but, like, I did it. And then, like, when I woke up in the morning after the whole trouble in the airport, I was just, like, I was feeling achy all over. Mind you, like 2 days before, I had a match in China. So, and then it was my debut match, and I was just like, I really want to do well, but I can do this. So yeah, so I pushed through. I did my best. Ganbatte. So yeah.
So you said that May lives at the dormitory, the Gotta Move dormitory.
It's like a simple one bedroom, like it. You know how tiny living spaces are in Japan. It's like a very tiny place, but it's very like cozy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had all the necessities. It's not luxurious at all, but it was. It had all the necessities. It had a hot shower, which I was thankful for, because after all the troubles I've gone through, I needed a hot shower. So, yeah. And then it was so nice because, like, there was a Family Mart nearby, a 7-Eleven nearby. So if I needed extra money or food late at night, I could just go there. And then I think May lives in Tokyo as well. But, like, the dorm was just, like, 3 blocks away from the dojo. So it was easier for her to just stay there and go to the dojo. So when I was staying there, there was a few nights where we had events. She would stay with me. Because so we can go to the events together. But then when we didn't have events, we only had training, she would go home.
So you got thrown into the deep end real quick, having a match at Shinkiba First Ring. Who was that against? Do you remember?
It was against Makoto and I forgot his name. Blade Sun? I don't forget his name. The handsome guy. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. So
his name has been really like a lot of it's just basically in Japanese, like, you know, complicated or Japanese for me, and I was just like, I can't really. I'm so sorry. He was such a great guy too. He was so friendly and so welcoming.
What was that? No, don't feel bad. It's fine. What was that experience like? I mean, putting a match together with the Japanese people so quickly.
It was honestly tricky at first because there was some, you know, language barriers. But when you, a lot of like wrestling moves, like when you say wrestling, also we used a lot of onomatopoeia. So basically, bam, pow, you know, those mm-hmm. type of things. To like when it's drop kick, it's like bam, like that. So that's and then like, cause like I think when wrestlers come together, no matter what language they're using, like they can understand each other from like just, you know, moving together. Like when you push someone to the ropes, like we are automatically like, when you hold your left, when we, you know, hold our left hands to our left hands, like. Oh, okay, she's going to throw me, or she's going to push me to the rope, or she's going to throw me to the turnbuckle. It's automatic for us wrestlers, I think. Because there's most wrestling around the world is basically like, you know, there's a basic to it. I think only Mexico is different. Because like a clothesline, and a clothesline is with the right arm, the shoulder block is also is with the left arm, but in Mexico, it's different. I think clotheslines are left, I think. So basically, like, it was easier than I expected. Also because prior to me working in Japan, I also worked with Emi Sakura before. I also worked mm-hmm. with Riho before. So I think I've worked with Russians who couldn't speak English. I've worked with Thai people who didn't speak English. So, like, I was pretty used to just using like wrestling as a language. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And you were some experienced people too. You mean Cherry was your partner and wrestling. Makoto has wrestled everywhere, everybody. So she knows what she's doing. And then Hagane is the gentleman you're talking about, right?
Hagane.
He's very handsome.
Yeah, he is very handsome. But basically, like, yeah. But yeah, it's like, I felt completely safe because, like, they were vets. They were, you know, they can handle me. And, like, I think there was one moment that I messed up, but, like, Makoto just handled it with such grace. And I was so thankful that these senpais of mine are there to catch me if I fail.
And it's amazing how good just everybody is over there. You know, it's like, honestly, it doesn't matter.
Honestly, everyone's just like, you know, so pro. Even like people who got to move who just started out, I think I'm just gonna be like frank with this, like people who just started out there, like I think the Lulu Pencil and the other girls, even though they just started like what, wrestling a year ago or like wrestling for 6 months or something like that, they're already better than some of the people I know who have been wrestling for longer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because of the time of training, because here in the Philippines, we don't really get to train as much as we want to, because we only get to train like once a week, because we don't have our own ring or own dojo, if you say. Mm-hmm. So we have our ring, but it's only for events, but we can't train in them. So we only rent out like a gym once a week for everyone to train in, but like their level of training is like polished everything and amazing, and it's just like everyone's so well trained. And yeah, I want to live in Japan so that I can, you know, wrestle as much as I can.
It's the power of Emi Sakura too, you know, she's one of the best trainers in the world.
also, like, her knowledge of the art of wrestling is just great. It's like a well of knowledge, you know. It's just like she's wrestled almost everywhere and anywhere. She's also like wrestled a lot of people. She's wrestled in AEW and she's been wrestling for 25 years. And honestly, like, she's a legend.
And she's better than ever too. She's she's so good. She's still so good, you know.
Yeah, I don't think she was ever bad.
No. No, she was not. Yeah. From the get-go, she was she's never bad. So what was day to day like in Japan while you were there? I mean, did you cook your own meals? Did you how did that kind of stuff work?
I would normally go out. Because, mm-hmm. You know, I only had like a week and a half. Oh, I think like 15 days, I think, or 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, no. I think it was like 12 days or 13. Something like that. Not sure. But I tried to, like, for the first day, I just chilled and had a show and it chilled. Because I really wanted to recuperate. Because I've been wrestling for like 4 or 5 days now, so I just chilled at the place. I went to a cafe that had internet because at the time I couldn't get internet though. So I went to a cafe that had internet near the dojo, and then I decided to visit the dojo and then to see if someone's there. And then I met with some of my friends from Singapore who were there as well, but they were there for like another company that they were invited with. I think it was OWE or something. Mm-hmm. And then basically, like, okay, so if training is done, I will try to do something that I want. Like, I went to the statue of Hachiko. I went to the Haoming store where they sell like AEW stuff and like New Japan stuff and stuff like that. So I went to that, yeah.
And then you got to be a tourist a little bit.
Yeah, I did the whole like tourist / wrestler thing. So we had training. I went like it was like normally in the morning until lunch, like after lunchtime. So after lunch, I would just like go back home, like get a fast, like, you know, a shower so you know I can be fresh and not sweaty, and I would go out and explore. But before going out and exploring, I would make sure that, you know, I got the train routes that I needed. Because I didn't want to get lost. So, yeah, basically, I checked on the routes, and then I checked on what I wanted to do. I went to the, I don't remember the name. I think Harajuku? Harajuku. The shopping center?
Was it where the girls were all dressed up all kawaii? Shinjuku Crossing, the crazy crossing right there.
Not that one. There was a time that I went to Akihabara. I went to check out anime stuff. I love anime. And then I went to the fashion district. I can't remember the name of it, but I went and shopped for, you know, tourist souvenirs and stuff like that. I even brought home like a Tokyo ref magnet for my mom. And some cat keychains because my mom loves cats. And I bought chopsticks for all my friends. And basically, I bought Kit Kats for people for PWR and stuff like that. So, like, I did the whole touristy thing. And, like, I went to... Oh, my God. What's the steak place that every wrestler goes to?
Ribera.
I went to Ribera after, like, a show, I think, or like after a training. I went to Ribera and I was just like, I'm doing all the Japan stuff, all the wrestler Japan stuff in this whole trip. So like that's me. So I never really got to cook at home. Even if I was hungry, there was like a 7-Eleven near / Family Mart so near. And like the food in 7-Eleven and Family Mart are like better than the Philippines, you know? Like, their food is, like, they have sushi. Like, actual good sushi. And, you know, I think they have, like, soba, too, I think. Huh? And, like, the bread in, like, you know, like, 7-Elevens and Family Marts are amazing. And yeah. I was just like, oh, my God.
When I go there, I pretty much live on the food at like 7-Eleven or Family Mart or Lawson, all those places like that.
Yeah, but they're so good, right? Because like you don't even need to go to like the fancy places. I mean, the fancy places are nice to go to. Like not even fancy, it's just more like common. But yeah, the convenience store food. So the only time that I got to like kind of cook was like on my farewell party and got some, apparently they know that I like takoyaki, so Mitsuru made takoyaki, and she was just like, Crystal, here, I'll teach you. And then she was teaching me how to do takoyaki, which is like the grilled, I think you know takoyaki, right? It's grilled
balls.
A squid inside and like a bunch of cabbage and batter.
Mm-hmm.
That one. So like I was rolling it and I was actually sweating because like it was really hot, like the grill was really hot. And I was just like, I want to make these look good, you know? So even Sakura-san said like, oh, these look great. These actually look like circles because Hagane-san tried as well. And then he was like, his takoyakis didn't look as perfectly circle as mine did. So I was just like, that was the only time I ever got to, you know, kind of cook. It's not even me. I didn't even prepare anything. I just rolled balls. So, yeah. That was my only time, like, you know, cooking.
What was training like over there? Did you guys train at Ichigaya or did you train at the ring?
We trained in Ichigaya. It was really fun. Like, we did some drills. And also, honestly, they're, like, after training workout killed me. So they would do like this deck of cards thing. Like apart from the deck, they would also do other workouts. So basically this deck of cards that they have. So basically like a heart is like the hearts are for like squats. The diamonds are for push-ups. The clovers are for, I don't know, sit-up, something like that. Mm-hmm. So once you pull out like a two of hearts, like you do like two squats. Two squats. Like you finish the whole deck. So at the end of it, you've been doing like, you know, like hundreds of push-ups and hundreds of squats. And then after the whole deck is finished, we jogged around like I think two blocks away, and then there was like this place that had like a shrine.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like a staircase, a very steep staircase. Like three sets of like 20 cases of stairs. And then they said like, Krista, run up. And I was just like, me, I'm already dying from the deck of cards that they made me do. And they were like, you need to run up and down with the team. So basically I was like, I think I was with Mitsuru, Mei, and I forgot the other person, but we were running up and down the shrine stairs, and I was dying. And then like Maza-san was the one training us, and he was really just pushing me. And then like Sakura-san came by and said like, "Crystal, you okay?" I was like, "No." I was just like panting really hardly. And then she was saying, I think in a way she told like Maza-san to go easy on me for a bit. And I was just like, I think they were like saying like, because before Maza-san was really trying to like push me like to keep up with the other girls, because mind you, like the other girls like do this on the regular. This was my first time doing it. And then so when we were running up and down the stairs, I was like, I'm panting really hard. Sakura-san came by and kind of saved me, saying like, oh, your son's okay, take it easy. You don't need to do it as fast as the other girls. As long as you finish, it's fine. And I was like, the girls already finished, and I still had to do like another set or two. And I was just like, yeah. So that was a training.
If you're not used to it, it's tough to do.
Yeah, because like, okay, I've never run upstairs unless like, you know, I'm in a hurry. But I never like voluntarily did it for like training, like going up and down three flights of stairs, like 20 cases of stairs, like basically 60 steps on a steep hill. You know, I've never done that in my life. So I was just like panting, and like I was just like, and then when they were done, like Mei, Mitsuru, everyone was just like, you know, fresh, cool, and like, you know, they were sweating, but me on the side was like looking like I was deaf. I was so pale, sweating profusely, and I was just like, and I'm just like, they were like walking normally, casually going back to the dojo to, you know, freshen up, drink some water, and I was just like dragging my feet. I was like, that was just me after the training, and I was just like, oh my god.
So one of the neat things over there is that wrestling's a job for people, you know, for people in America, or for people like in the Philippines, or, you know, Singapore or Thailand or wherever they're at. It's a hobby that, you know, you try to make it into a career, but it's their day-to-day job.
It's a hobby that pays sometimes. Basically. But yeah, I like, one of my dreams is to be able to get far enough into wrestling. I know that there's not the likeliest, like I'm not gonna be able to like be a big ass WWE superstar or AEW superstar, but I wanna, you know, be able to wrestle as much as I can, that it can be my job.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you think, I mean, you're young, you're attractive, you're athletic, you're everything that they would want, why don't you think you'd be a WWE superstar or AEW superstar someday? I think you could be.
I mean, I was scouted by WWE for the Mae Young Classic, but I was supposed to be in the Mae Young Classic, but the U.S. Embassy turned down my visa.
Mm.
So it's going to be hard, because like the Philippine passport is one of the weakest. I think it's the weakest in Southeast Asia. I mean, like, the most powerful... I think one of the reasons why, like, Emi Sakura and Riho can go to, like, the States, like, you know, freely, is because Japan's passport is the strongest in the world. And U.S. as well is very powerful. But the Philippines is pretty weak. And whatever country I have to go to, other than Southeast Asian countries, like, when I go to Japan, I needed a visa. China, I needed a visa. India, I needed to get an e-visa. So, basically, like, it's a lot of visas. As much as I want to pursue wrestling full time, I still need to find a job on the side, because I need a job that will pay for the visas, you know?
Yeah, no. And they're just worried that the Filipinos would go there and never leave, basically, is what they're worried about?
Yeah, because that's the stigma, yeah. Because there's a lot of people, like a lot of Filipinos, that are looking for a better life, because the Philippines, if you live in Manila, there's a lot of competition, because Manila is the capital. There's a lot of job opportunities, but there's also a lot of people who are looking for jobs. So sometimes Filipinos go abroad. Sometimes they would actually look for a job instead of like doing the touristy stuff. So they're very careful with like selection of visa, you know.
I've actually been to Manila. I've been to Manila a couple times. I love Manila. Busy. I love Manila. Yeah, I love the city, but yeah, but there's real poverty there. There's real, you know, it's not like Japan. It's quite different. So,
but it's yeah, like so. A lot of people from the provinces go to Manila looking for jobs.
Yeah.
When some of the Manilenos, the people from Manila, they actually are here and they're still looking for jobs, because there's a lot of competition. No matter how many businesses go up, like now, especially because the Manila is in kind of a recession because of COVID, it's hit us the worst in Southeast Asia, so it's very bad. So as much as I want to be a WWE superstar, like, it's gonna be hard for me to get like a visa, and hopefully one day I can. Honestly, my goal is just to wrestle in Japan.
Oh yeah, that would be nice. So so your first event in Ichigaya, what did you think of Ichigaya, the setup, everything, how it was done? People don't understand, it's a tiny little room where they jam people in to watch a wrestling show.
Actually, there were times that I was so scared, because I have a problem when I'm running. I find it hard to stop sometimes. If I try to stop myself full force, like sometimes I trip. But like I felt like if I ran too much, like my back leg would hit like a person because it's that close, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was scared that I might hit people, but then apparently they're used to it.
Yeah.
It was such an experience, but it was amazing because I got to wrestle in Gatoh Move, Thailand.
Ah.
Which is basically, Sakura-san established it. And then it's also like a mat wrestling in a very small space. And there's like, but it's bigger than Ichigaya. But it was so nice because at least I had that for reference.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so difficult because when I'm so used to like hitting the ropes, you know, getting that extra boost of momentum from the ropes when you hit them. So when I'm running and I'm kind of sinking into the mat because it's kind of padded, because you know, you don't really want to hit the floor. We'll die if we do that. So when we were like, you know, bumping on it or like just running on it, we would sink in sometimes and like the fabric would gather on my shoes sometimes. So like it was harder for me to run at full speed as fast as I can, basically.
So how did the people, I'm sure they accepted you right away, the fans accepted you right away at Ichigai. What was that experience like?
Honestly, like, because people in the Philippines see me as this tough woman. It's like I have a sleeve of tattoos, but I could never really, like, show my cute side or, like, you know, the normal way I act. Because apparently, according to almost everyone in Gatoh Move, I'm very cute. Even when I'm eating, like, I'm so cute. Like, they would, like, the most, like, the word I heard the most was kawaii, Crystal kawaii. And I was just like, I'm just being myself. Like, I found myself being able to just fully be myself. Because, like, in the Philippines, everyone just holds me to, like, such a high regard. Like, the first female wrestler, first international female wrestler, first, you know, international champion that's from the Philippines, stuff like that. So whenever I get to meet fans, they're always saying like, oh my god, you're such an inspiration. It's always, as much as I appreciate it, as much as I love it, and being able to inspire others is such an amazing feeling, you know. It's still kind of pressure. Because mm-hmm. like sometimes I want to just be myself and like, you know, I'm goofy. And like I stutter on some words sometimes, but I'm goofy. But yeah, I like laughing. I'm goofy, but you know, when someone's telling me like, oh, there's like after the show, there would be like, we would be selling T-shirts and, you know, prints and stuff like that. So when I'm in the Philippines, like everyone's just like, oh, Crystal, please sign this. I'm such a big fan of yours. Your stories inspire me. Blah blah blah. And it's like, oh, I'm so thankful that they do. But then that's it. That's all I can say because like, I feel like if I show my goofy side, like maybe like, I'll just break their hearts and like, oh, I'm a normal person too. Yeah. But everyone, fans, they were also so supportive. Like they knew that I wasn't, like, even though I'm not the best technically, because like I know I can improve technically. I that was like the first trip to Japan that I had. My training was different from them. So even though like I had some few mishaps here and there, they were like fully supporting me, like, oh, your dream is to wrestle in Japan. Congratulations that you're here. I hope you can come back, you know, in the future. And like they were so supportive. And like even though some people didn't know me, they were willing to buy like my prints and my T-shirts to buy support, to show support. And like, you know, just it was such an amazing thing too, because like not a lot of people in the Philippines would buy T-shirts because they think it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can buy it somewhere else, right? They can buy T-shirts for the same price for more, you know. They can buy two T-shirts for the price that you're selling it for. But in Japan, they don't question the price. They just buy it to show support. And I learned recently that's how they, like, they buy merch to show support and to help you keep going, which is honestly so amazing to me. And then I want to go to Japan and sell more. Because, like, I can't sell, because I bumped up the price a bit because I had to pay for her baggage. So I can bring the shirts, so like, you know, when I sell my shirts, it can pay for the baggage that I bought, basically. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So yeah, so I bumped up the price a bit, but yeah, they were just completely okay with it, and everyone's supportive. And I think I met someone, I forgot his name, but he was a doctor, and I think he runs another promotion, saying that maybe the next time I go to Japan, maybe I can wrestle there as well. And I was just like, oh my god. You know, when I was at the airport on my last day, like when I was about to go back, I was actually getting teary-eyed because I didn't want to leave yet. You know, I felt so at home. I felt welcomed. I felt like I was the happiest I've been in my wrestling career, because in Japan, like, I didn't really need to be so professional, you know? I mean, I was professional, but I could be professional with myself, being myself. Because when I would travel to like India or China, I had to be full on professional wrestler mode. Like, I had to be courteous and just like, you know, well mannered and just like formal. But when I was in Japan, I was still professional, but I was more myself. I was my goofy self. And I was just like, I felt so happy to be there. But yeah.
Yeah, every time I go there, I feel relaxed. I just feel relaxed and kind of just be me.
Yeah, it's like you don't need to be pressured to be like a stigma that you need to be, or I mean like someone that you need to be.
Yeah,
because I don't know. It's just a place, you know.
That's what I tell people. That's what I tell people. Yeah. It's like I can tell you all about Japan and how it. Like the feeling of being there and stuff, but you got to go to truly understand what it's like. It's an amazing, amazing place.
You feel safe too, even though like you're on the streets, like even if you're kind of lost, like you know that no one's gonna, you know, try to scam you or anything. You're just like there. You can ask people. Everyone's so respectful and so nice. Like, I think there was one time I was trying to get to Ribera, and then I was like looking at the buses, and I was just like, there was this one guy who had like a suitcase on him, like I think a suitcase on him. I think he was texting, and I was like, excuse me, is this the bus that goes to this place? And it was like, at first he was hesitant because maybe like he wasn't well versed in English, but like, when I showed him my phone that, like, I want to get on this bus to this station or, like, this bus stop. And then he took my phone and then he said, like, please wait 1 minute. And then he went to, like, the bus driver and he asked, like, is this the bus? Is this the station? Blah, 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 blah. And then he said yes. He came back to me and, like, he gave me my phone. And he said, like, he wished me good luck and be careful, safe travels. And then he said, like, 8 stops, like you need to count 8 stops before you get down. So like, he was so nice, like he didn't know me, but he was so courteous and nice. Like, he even took out the time. I think maybe he was busy or something, he was texting someone, but yeah. So like, I felt safe. Like, I didn't need to pretend to be a tough person or a thick-skinned person. I can just like be clueless in a way, you know, because in the Philippines I need to be this tough person when I'm on the street, because I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get robbed. I don't want to get anything. As much as I love the Philippines, but, you know, there's poverty. There's going to be people who, you know, snatch stuff away. So, like, mm-hmm. I need to be this tough person that is always on guard, you know. So, but in Japan, I was just, like, completely clueless, completely happy. I look like a lost puppy dog.
I'm wondering how you found the Hao Ming store, because it's not easy to find.
I asked like 4 people, because like I went down in Shibuya Station, and on Shibuya Station it's a long walk, right?
Yeah.
So I went down, and then like I went to Hachiko first, because I saw Hachiko, and I actually like, I do you know the Hachiko story, like.
Uh-huh.
His owner died, like but he still waits at the train station every day for him to come back. And I was just like, I needed to take a photo with Hachi. So there was like, it's a good thing that there were like police officers / like travel people, or like, you know, traffic authorities. Like, I would, there was a moment that there was like a road that I was supposed to go to, but it was like under construction. And then he was like, oh, you can't go on this side, please go on that side. He said, right, though, and then left, though, and then something like that. You know, their accent.
Yeah.
And then he taught me there. And then, like, I was like, there's like a neighborhood in Haoming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like a tiny little streets. And I was like getting confused, like, where the hell? And then there was a guy, and I was like, I'm sorry, is this the place where this is? And I was like, oh, yes, yes, you straight left. And then, like, yeah. And I was like, amazing, thank God. It was easier going back because I knew where it was.
Yeah, because I had like the pocket Wi-Fi and my phone with me, and I still had a problem finding it. I was like going through little streets all over the place trying to find that place.
I had pocket Wi-Fi too, and like my phone, but still, like,
yeah,
it lags sometimes. So also, like, your phone compass sometimes is like, yeah. Oh, you're. Like, you know, sometimes it thinks you're going backwards, but you're going forward.
Yeah.
So, like, your phone is just, like, confused, more confused than you. So I just had to ask people. And then people were, like, nice enough to, like, point it out to me.
And that's so, that's one of the things I love about going there. It's like, I don't know, it's an adventure because not everybody speaks English. Because you go to Manila, people speak English. You go to other places, people speak English. In Japan, people don't necessarily speak English. And I love that. I love having the challenge of trying to find my way around.
It's also like, in a way, it's like, we don't really get to have much adventures anymore in Sydney. Like, when you're in Manila, you do get to have adventures, but you know everything that you're doing. But when you're in Japan, like, even if you just wander around, it's like an adventure in its own, because, like, you know, you don't know where you're going, or like people, you don't know English, so like you just have to find things for your own. But it's like a nice thing to learn,
mm-hmm.
how to navigate. Basically, it's a different kind of adventure from the everyday that you're used to, you know?
Yeah, and what you talked about earlier, being safe, it's like you can go on an adventure and not worry about getting, even in America, getting, you know, robbed or something like that. You know, it's different. It's an adventure where you know you're going to be able to get home safely at the end of the day.
Yeah, and even if, you know, you get lost, you can probably ask someone to help you out.
Yeah, and people will actually treat you nice and want to help you.
Yeah, and some people even would like offer to go to where you want to go with, you know, so that you won't be lost.
Yeah, I've had that before too, where people walk me.
I think I saw like a YouTube video that this girl was like asking this guy, like a Japanese guy, where is this place, and then the guy like actually, you know, walked her through the place, and I was like, wow, Japanese.
That happened to me before too, where they like walked me 2 blocks to where I was going. I'm like, I felt almost embarrassed.
But they're so nice.
Yeah, so. They're just so nice, yeah.
But if I was that, and I, like, if I would actually do the same, like, if it was in my, you know, way, or, like, if I had time. If I'm running late, no, I'm just going to point you to the place that you need to go to. But if I had, like, time on my hands, and I wasn't doing anything, I would actually, you know, if I was in Japan and knew everything, I would actually walk you and do the same thing.
See, but I've taken some things from Japan and brought it back to my life here, like, you know, because like at baseball games over there, they clean up all their trash. In America, they just put it under your seat and have somebody else clean it. So it's things like that. And just being polite, I've brought back from Japan and tried to instill it in some of my friends and stuff. Like, hey, this is what they do over there. It makes sense to do it. So why don't we do it here? So
I got back.
Me too. I was there in March. I'm glad I got to go before everything got crazy. But yeah, I was supposed to go again this month, but that's obviously not happening. So yeah. So I saw you for the first time at Ichigaya, and you teamed with Mitsuru versus Saki and Yuna Mizumori. So you talked about training with Mitsuru. I love her. She's such a, everybody there is such sweethearts, but what was it like teaming with Mitsuru versus Yuna Mizumori, and Saki? Yunamon.
It was harder to speak because, I don't know, Makoto is, I think, in Hagane, Cherry-san were more well-versed with English. Makoto was more well-versed in English, also Cherry-san. But while Tropical, what was their team name again?
Tropical Wild.
Yeah, Tropical Wild. So basically, like, they weren't as well-versed in English. So it was actually kind of harder for me to communicate. But Mitsuru understood me pretty well. And I just, basically, like, my way of communication was showing with my body when we were, like, planning for the match. It's like, I want to do this. So I showed them the moves. And, like, I showed them the moves that I can do. So it's actually really fun because everyone has different styles, you know. And also, I was part of a tag team before, but it wasn't, like, you know, Japan style. Because, like, in Japan, like, or Joshi style, is basically, like, a lot of, like, combination moves, a lot of, like, combination pinning and stuff like that, you know? Like, a lot of tag team moves as well. But, like, in the Philippines, when we had, like, you know, tag teams, it's more just, like, this move and then this move. And, like, you know, tag the person, pin the person, just, you know.
So that so that's the show. I tell this story. I've told this story a million times on the podcast, but that's the show where they saw that I was wearing a Bull Nakano t-shirt, and Saki did Bull Nakano's submission hold on Mitsuru during that match for me and smiled at me.
Isn't it so sweet? Like, that kind of intimacy is something that you can't get anywhere else, to be honest.
No.
Because, like, as much as I want to be, like that, like, you know, but I can't, like, when I'm on the inside the ring in PWR, like, I can't point that. I can't, also, on the ring so that, you know, you can only see the ring and, like, not the outside. Also, the place that PWR holds is shows. It's like it's a theater space that we have bleachers now, but you can still, like, the background is basically black, so you can't. I don't have that sense of intimacy the way I haven't gotten move. Like, yeah.
So, people that haven't been to a Gata Move show, I mean, they do singing and dancing to start. And then they do they do a little talk about, everybody talks about their match at the end. And
yeah,
what was that experience like trying to talk to a Japanese crowd after a show?
I made sure that I used more simple words. It's not that I think, I'm not saying that they're dumb or anything, but the simple words get through people better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can, like, make, you know, more complicated, more heartwarming. Basically, like, I just use simple words to say, I'm so happy to be here. Like, I defeated May today, but I know that she is my rival and she wants to defeat me too. Something like that. It was just like, it got through the people better than, you know, if I did more complicating chat, or that makes sense.
And on that show, the one where you teamed with Mitsuru, Emmy said you could speak English because I was there.
Yeah, because you're a foreigner.
Yeah.
But
she said English okay.
English okay. But Emmy-san knows that I can speak a tiny bit, anime fan. And now I'm actually, like, studying Japanese, and I think you saw that on my tweets. Honestly, hiragana and katakana, it's, oh my god. The Japanese language, it's very complicated to learn. I'm actually enjoying it, but now that, you know, I can communicate in English, and hopefully when I go back to Japan, I can communicate in Japanese, that I can show, like, my appreciation more, because I want to use, like, I want to say everything in my heart, you know, when I go there next time.
Yeah, I almost feel guilty sometimes that people try so hard to speak English, but I can't speak Japanese at all, and it's like, I'm terrible. I should learn Japanese.
I think you can learn this, like, you know, the tiny catchphrases, or, like, you know, common words that they use just to show that, you know, you're trying, I think, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've learned the Yoroshiku Negaishimasu, all that kind of things like that, to be polite and stuff. Yeah. And those sorts of things. But yeah, I feel guilty sometimes. Like, I mean, these people are working so hard to talk to me in English, and I'm so lame that I can't speak any Japanese. So yeah, I'm working on it. So I understand where you're coming from with that. Yeah, absolutely. So you got to wrestle Mei Suruga in a singles match. She is so good. She is so good.
She is.
What was it like wrestling her?
It was fun. It was really fun because throughout the trip, because I was staying with Mei the whole entire trip, like, we became friends. Like, even though, like, at home, we would just be, like, chilling and stuff like that. And she's actually trying to learn English. So it was good for her to be speaking to me because she would, you know, get to use her English knowledge. But, yeah, it was really fun because... There were times, like, there were moments in that match that it was just supposed to be, like, a joke, but we put it in the match either way, and, like, it created something, like, so fun and so such an entertaining match. Even Sakura-san was pleased with it and said, like, good match, Crystal and Mei. And then there was this one time that I told Mei to just stand, and then I would kick over her, and she was actually so scared. And then when my foot actually, like, went over her head, like, she was, like, amazed with it. And then we actually put that in the match. And then people were just, like, laughing. Like, Crystal keeps missing because Mei is so short. So, like, it just became such an entertaining, fun match to watch that whenever I feel like I miss wrestling or I miss Japan, I would always just, like, go back to Gato Moves Facebook and watch it again because I want to keep reliving that moment because it was such a fun match to, you know, make and talk about it and, like, do as well. So
you had to say goodbye. Nobody, when you talk about getting teary-eyed, I think everybody that leaves Japan gets teary-eyed because I never want to leave. I never want to leave either. I just want to stay there.
Yeah.
So what was kind of summarize what your experience was like? Was it what you expected? Was it more than you expected? Kind of just talk about your experience in Japan.
So, like, honestly, I wanted to go to Japan even when I was a kid, not even just because of wrestling, because I want to tell this story that when I was a kid, I used to collect this, like, cheap books, like, thin books, but basically, like, it was, like, a series of books that was about every country. Like, in Australia, there's, like, facts and then recipes and things you can do and stuff like that. And then I had a Japan book. It was my favorite book of all. I actually learned how to fold origami because of that. I learned, you know, basic words like konnichiwa, sayonara, stuff like that. And then I always wanted to see the cherry blossom. So I really, when I started wrestling, I wanted to, like, save up just to, like, go to Japan, like, a, you know, a vacation trip, a leisure trip. But I never expected that my first trip to Japan would be, like, you know, you're going to be wrestling in Japan. Like, it's a double dream made come true. So I was expecting so many things. Like, I expected, like, everyone to be polite, the cleanliness of the place, you know, the fast travel. Everything I expected was exceeded by what I had, you know, experienced in Japan. Because, like, when they say the train will come in a minute and a half, it will come in a minute and a half. When you're standing at the station, say, like, you know, their monitors places, like, the train will be coming at, like, 12:05. It will come at 12:05. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, my God, that is very, very timely. That is on the dot. And, like, you don't see a piece of trash anywhere. If you do see a piece of trash, like, someone will pick it up and put it in the trash. And then it's just, like, the kindness and the politeness of everyone is just, like, you know, amazing. There was this one time, I think in Japan, my shoe, actually, the sole of it broke. And then I went to, like, a supermarket to, like, look for super glue or, like, shoe, you know, glue to stick on the sole. And, like, I was asking this lady, even though, like, she was freaked out at first because, like, she didn't understand English. But I showed her a photo of my shoe. I took a photo of my shoe and then like it's flap. And then she was like, ah, and then she just directed me. Like, even though she was scared of the language barrier, she was eager to help, you know? Yeah. It was just like all my expectations were exceeded. And, you know, once you go to Japan, it's not just the one. You're gonna want to go back and back and back again. I feel like I sound like a, you know, promotional story about Japan. But yeah, I want to go back again. Not even just for, not even to wrestle. I mean, yeah, I want to wrestle again in Japan, but it's just like, you know, I just want to go back, experience everything. Even if I'm not gonna be wrestling, I would still love to go to Japan. Which is honestly like why I was getting so teary-eyed, because I felt like there were so many things more that I wanted to do. Because, like, I was on such a tight schedule because, like, I think there was, like, the first day I had the match and then I had, like, three day off. So I chilled for one and then went to training for two and then, like, a match and then a break and then a match again and then a break and then my flight. So that was the schedule. But, like, I want to go to Osaka one day. I want to be able to, like, drink tea and then go to shrines. And I want to see the cherry blossoms and experience snow. I've never experienced snow because I live in a tropical country. So, yeah.
So, you went back to the Philippines. And what did you bring back wrestling-wise from your trip to Japan? What did you bring back to the Philippines with you in the ring?
In the ring, I think, because you know how WWE style / Western style is very different from the pacing of a Japanese style match. Like, the way WWE, like, first there's like I'm not sure how well versed you are with like wrestling terms, but the first bit is like the shine, which is like when the good guys, the faces, like, you know, show what they got. And there would be a long, long heat. Basically, the good guy is going to get beat up by the bad guy for such a while. And then there's going to be exchange of offense and then the winner. But in Japan, it's just like shine. And like the tiniest bit of like heat, like may beat me up just for like a minute or two. And then it was just back and forth action, back and forth action. I think that was one of the things that I brought back with me, like the timing, the pacing of the match, because it helped me create more matches that were like fast paced and entertaining. And like, there's nothing to miss. Like, you know, if you go, because there's a lot of, I'm so sorry, but to anyone who is listening, but when I'm in PWR, there are some matches where I hear fans would walk out to just go on a pee break and then go back. And it's the same match, and they feel like they didn't miss anything. Mm-hmm. But in Japan, like if you go for you know a quick bathroom break, you miss like a lot of spots, like a lot of moments in the match. You won't want to miss, you know. So, like the pacing, the Japanese matches, like it's so exciting and enticing, and it's just like back and forth action that you don't get bored at all. It's just like that's what I brought back. Especially to like my matches here in the Philippines. And I feel bad for my opponents because I keep pushing them to be like faster and like, and I feel like after I went to Japan, my opponents were like, I'm gonna get tired. Like at the end of the match, to me, I'm tired, but like I'm not like dying, because like dying to me was like when I went the 20 cases, the 60 staircases, you know, in the temple. Like, so when I was like having the match, like a fast-paced Japanese style match in the Philippines, like my opponents were very tired, but me, I was just like fine. Yeah, I'm happy, I'm smiling. At least the crowd was greatly entertained and they were having fun along with us. Also, like I think the comedic factor. You know how most Japanese matches like kind of have like a bit of comedy to them?
Mm-hmm.
Like a tiny bit. Like I think I saw like a match between, I don't remember, but it was like Riho and someone else, but Riho has this like signature thing that she sits on the back of her opponent and do like a pose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, type of thing. Like a lot of Japanese wrestlers do that, but it's like so comedic, yet so well timed. And like I think my match with Emi Sakura when she was here, like we did like a bit of a skit on before the whole match. So like she was going for a test of strength, and then I just split like straight down. And then she was looking at me, and then she was like, "What?" And then she goes in and tries to split, and I tried to help her how to split, and like the audience was laughing because Sakura-san was like in such pain. And then then we started the match. So like that's what, that was like such a good thing. Like put a bit of comedy in your wrestling, and the people will love it. So like that's one of the things as well that I brought back to the Philippines.
And I think anywhere I go. And I think people accept that comedy and stuff because it gets intense at some point in the match. Like sometimes here in America, yeah. It's comedy and it stays comedy, but in Japan it's comedy and then all of a sudden two people are mat wrestling and then going for it. Yeah. And then so I think that's kind of easier to, even in the middle of the match, it's kind of easier to accept, you know, that, you know, yeah, the comedy, if you're killing each other the other 95% of the match.
No, because like also because sometimes if it's all just comedy, you won't take the match seriously. Mm-hmm. You know. But if it's also like all intense, like you're just like you're you know, you won't be able to take a breather, or you won't be able to like breathe for a bit because like the match is just like them pounding each other, you know, so much. Mm. And like they're just like suplexing each other so much, and it's just, you're just like in that moment, but it's just so fiery. And sometimes it's nice to like break things before, you know, going back to like intense. It gets overwhelming to watch sometimes.
Yeah, save that super intense stuff for the end of a feud, or you know, the end, like a main event, end of feud, something like that, you know. So the rest of the time we can mix some comedy in.
Yeah, it makes a more entertaining match for me.
So you've got to wrestle pretty much quite a bit all over Southeast Asia and into China and stuff. Was the China trip, was that the WWE tryout?
It was, one was the WWE tryout, and the second one was the for MKW, which is Middle Kingdom.
What was those experiences like? I mean, that's two very different experiences, but I've never been to China, so I'm always curious about what was it like going to China to wrestle?
It's actually intimidating. There's a lot about their culture and stuff that I don't really understand, but it's actually like, you know how in Japan, tourists are kind of welcome, like, you know, everyone's going to, you know, are willing to help out. But in China, people are really kind of brush off, like they don't care about you and stuff like that. So the people that I've met are such wonderful, nice people, like people from MPW and stuff like that. And most of the time, I only stuck with the people I knew. And whenever I did go out, I would go with people that I knew. So I couldn't, like, look, I'm scared to get lost in China.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Like, that's one of the things. Like, I would be scared if I got lost in China. Also, there's not a lot of internet because, like, VPN. You know, you need VPN to be able to get access to Instagram, Facebook, and stuff like that. But, yeah.
The government's rate is going up.
The guys in the, you know, immigration, they were very nice and welcoming. And then in China, they were like questioning, like they looked at my passport, like all the stamps that I had on my passport, but like they were like even questioning my name, because like I don't have a middle name, because like I carry my mother's last name. So they were like saying like, oh, why do you only have, you don't have middle name, you only have last name. It's like, oh, my mother isn't married, so they even questioned me about that. So I was like, this is gonna be an interesting trip. Very interesting trip. But yeah, wherever I wrestle, people in the wrestling community is really nice, you know. I think people realize that it's hard for traveling wrestlers slash, you know, international wrestlers to keep traveling. And just like, it's hard for hard for us because like we would fly in the day before, have a match, and then fly out the next day, you know. Mm-hmm. It's normally that even time to go out and be touristy. That's why when I was in Japan, I did all the touristy stuff I could do. But whenever like I'm in Singapore, like people ask me like, oh, where have you been in Singapore? Like, where have you been in Malaysia or Thailand? And I was just like, oh, I was at the hotel in the mall. That's it. Because I don't have time to do any of the touristy stuff. Like, I can't do any, like, I haven't seen any places in Malaysia. I haven't seen, like, the Batu Caves or anything. But I've been to the mall in Thailand because we go eat in the mall, you know? So, it's just like, hotel, venue, eat, and then, and like, a bit of souvenir shopping before you go to the airport, stuff like that. That's normally my thing. So people in the wrestling industry, wherever I go, like no matter what country it is, like people are very accommodating. Like, oh, hey, Crystal, we'll take you out for a bit so that your trip isn't just as empty as traveling and working, you know? So so people are very nice in that sense. I don't know if it's just me or is it everyone, but to me, that's how they treat me. So.
What was the WWE tryout experience like? Was that, I'm sure that was a little intimidating as well.
It was intimidating and very hard. Very hard. It was very it's actually harder than the Japan one. Because like in the WWE one, we would be like, we had a set schedule every day for like 5 days. So like the first day it was waiting for everyone to arrive. So we had like a free time. So at the end of the day, we were just like, registration, health check, and everything like that. And then after that, the first day of like training slash, you know. So basically, it's like a warm-up, cardio slash, you know. Basically, they had us like running. And then 2 hours later, they had us wrestling, rolling, bumping, everything like that. And then 2 hours later after that, we would be like doing cardio, like lifting weights, like weight bags, and then like running across it, or like piggybacking a person and then running across. So basically, like it was cardio training, cardio, and then lunch. And then cardio training, cardio, and then we're out for the day. And then the next day, we would have like an outdoor set. Like they had us flipping tires and, you know, carrying weights again on our backs, and then running, and then at the end you have to do like 10 squats or 20 and stuff like that. It was just like, wow.
You think they were trying to blow you up?
I think they were testing our cardio as well. Good thing I have like good-ish cardio, but it was still hard. Because like I could keep up. It was just that after the first day, my body was already like sore. So like I had like pain relief patches all over me during the nighttime. Even my roommate was Chinese, had pain relief patches. And then like I think after the second day, because I only had like I think three pain relief pills. Like to help, it was like for sore muscles. Yeah. So like I only had like 4, and I was just like, I'm gonna be here for 4 more days. If I drink this tomorrow, I won't have one for the next. I won't have one for the last day. So it was like pacing my pain relief, you know, medication and patches and everything. And I was just like, on the third day, I drank one, even though my body is like completely sore. Like my muscles were sore in the places that I didn't even know I had muscles in. Or like I didn't even know those muscles can get sore. So I was just like, whenever I wake up in the morning, I was just like, I wouldn't even get up. Like, you know how you get up from your bed? You know, you get up. I don't do that. I roll. I roll to the side and then I fall on my knees. And then that's how I get up. Legit. Like, I would push, like, I would roll to the side so that my knees would be, like, on the floor. And then I would use as little strength as I can on my arms to push myself to stand up. That's how I did it for the next, you know, 4 days that I was in China.
You think they were testing to see how prepared everybody was to be there?
Because, like, everyone was either an athlete or a model or a wrestler. So, like, apart from, like, the 10 pro wrestlers that they scouted from Southeast Asia, they had, like, 10 guys who were athletes in China or, like, places in China or, like, Asian but outside of China. And then they also had, like, and the women, because I was closer to the girls because we would, like, do, you know, exercises together. There was a girl that was a model. There was a girl who was an Instagram blogger or something like that. There was a girl who was, like, a fitness model. There was a girl who was, who had CrossFit. There was another girl who had CrossFit. But basically, like, it was either they had a look or they had an athletic background. That was, like, they were also, I think, looking for if the person is trainable. Like, they were looking for our progress at the end of the week. Like, if this person can learn how to do this in this span of time. It was so sad because, like, when I went there, like, the coaches didn't really correct me much because, like, I was rolling fine. All my, you know, my basics were fine. I was just, like, there was one time I got scolded because, like, I forgot that I was supposed to get up and then get out. Instead of, I just rolled out the ring. And I was just, like, oh, Crystal, give me 10 push-ups. And I was, like, oh, right, I forgot. So, like, yeah, it was a lot process at the time. Also, because, like, when you're there, you're, like, you want to give off the best impression that you can, you know, be a character if you can so that, you know, they see your personality. So you're just out there, like, you know, you see, you know,
just performing the entire time. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, like, you're a wrestler. Like, you can't be, like, you know, yourself because you have to be on your guard. Like, oh, hey, is the camera on me? And then you have to be like, I'm okay. With the brightest smile on your face because you don't want the camera to see, like, you're dying from soreness of every part of your body. You know, I didn't even know my ears could hurt, but my ears hurt. I think there was one time I put, like, a bag weight on my ear and on the top of my shoulder, and I was carrying it. So I kind of, like, because I was losing balance a bit, so I kind of put my head a bit to the side so I can, like, you know, squish it in so that it wouldn't fall. And then the next day, like, it wasn't really, like, a lot of pressure even, but I just had to keep doing it and moving all over again. Like, I had to do 4 sets of that. So, like, I pressed my head a bit to the bag so that it wouldn't fall. And, like, the next day, my ears hurt. Like, I didn't even know that was possible. But, yeah, it was possible, so...
So, there's not a ton of female wrestlers in Southeast Asia. So, I mean, I've talked to Alexis Lee before in yourself. Who were the other women that were there that were wrestlers?
Gypsy.
Okay.
From Thailand.
Okay, good.
That's it. It was just me, Gypsy, and Alexis Lee. We were the three female wrestlers from Southeast Asia that got a tryout in WWE. It's funny, too, because we were all very close and we've had matches with each other. So, like, when we were in WWE, like, we were just, like, you know, buddy.
So, yeah, but you had somebody you knew you can get comfortable with a little bit, you know?
Yeah, which was honestly nice and, like, comforting because, you know, you're in a country that you don't really know anyone. You're in a kind of intimidating environment because you have a tryout with WWE, and, like, I was scared because, like, I really wanted to do well. I didn't want, you know, to be seen in a bad light also. But it was so comforting because, you know, people that I knew and I could trust were there, and that if I felt bad, if I felt like I wasn't good enough, like, you know, there were people there to support me. And then I would do this for them too. So
and it's you guys are in a unique situation because you guys are trying to wrestle to get out of your country to go explore to other companies, other countries.
Yeah.
That's a pretty unique for you guys versus people that are in Japan or people that are in America or even Mexico, things like that. You guys are working to get out of your country, basically.
I think because, you know, the U.S., Mexico, Japan, they're so well known for the wrestling. Mm-hmm. The wrestling has been there for decades, you know. WWE, like, was there since, I think, like, the 80s. I'm not sure. I'm wrong about that, but,
been around. Japan, it's been around forever, yeah.
So basically, also like Japan, it was one of the places that was established early on. Like, they didn't have a lot of wrestling in the U.S., but they already had like wrestling in Japan at that time. Also, like, you know, because as much as we love our countries, like as much as I love the Philippines, Gypsy Island, and Alexis Lee Singapore, you know, we still want to go to the places that is more abundant of wrestling because. Mm. If I stay here in the Philippines, the only people I'm going to match up with are some guys and the only four other girls that are in my company, you know? Mm-hmm. But if I go to Japan, there's like a sea of Joshi wrestlers that I can have matches with too, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, also I think in Singapore, Alexis, there's only like three other women. And in Thailand, there was only one other woman. So Gypsy would only have like matches with that one girl. And it was at the time that if I visit when I get to go to Thailand, that would be when Gypsy would be able to fight me or have a match with me. Mm-hmm. It's like also because being able to experience other wrestlers, it makes you more experienced and like your knowledge would be, you know, wider, greater. So.
Yeah, no, yeah, you only get better if you wrestle people that are better than you, you know. I think that's in a lot of industries, you know.
If you keep wrestling the same person, you know, you guys are going to be stuck. Also yeah. Because, like the Philippines had, like, PWR, the company here in the Philippines, hasn't even been around for 10 years. It was established in 2014. We had their first show in 2015, late 2015, like, you know, December or November 2015. So it's almost 5 years now, almost. So there's only such limited knowledge here, like techniques and, you know, things that you can do. Like I'm one of the trainers here in the Philippines as well. So like what I learn, I teach the other people. And I don't really have anywhere else to, like, learn from unless, like, you know, I go abroad. Because, mm-hmm. like, everything that I've learned here, I've already, you know, taught to other people. But if I go to, like, a place where wrestling is abundant, like WWE or, you know, the United States or Japan, like, I get to be able to absorb more knowledge and techniques that I can perfect my wrestling. And also mm-hmm. because... here in the Philippines, you only get to wrestle 1 week. I think in Singapore, they have, like, their training facility, they get to wrestle more, but they only have, like, shows every 2 months, something like that. Mm-hmm. But in Japan, they have shows, like, what, 3-4 times a week sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah, you look at the schedule, some people wrestle 5-6 times a week for different companies, you know, it's just, like, every single day almost.
It's crazy. Like, but for us, that would be crazy because to me, I get to wrestle once a month. Alexis gets to wrestle like twice, like once every 2 months. But for them, be able to get that much, you know, experience and knowledge. I want to be able to, you know, get to that. I mean, as much as I want to help the Philippines grow and maybe be the next Japan, maybe that's too far off, but you know. But be the next place where wrestling is abundant too. But it's gonna be such a long time before that happens that I wanna you know, because I'm only getting older. I'm not getting younger, and my body's gonna get, you know, more mature, more frail. Because, you know, the expectancy of, like, wrestlers, you can only, wrestle until, like, you're, if you're very fit, until you're 40, maybe, you know?
Yeah. No, so, and, I think you have to, unfortunately, you have to leave for people in your own country to see you on a bigger platform, to see you on WWE, to see you on AEW or wherever, see you in Japanese wrestling to inspire a bigger audience, you know?
Yeah, because if I can, like, bring that kind of, if I'm able to bring my name, then a lot more people are going to be able to you know, have the courage to be a wrestler, because not a lot of people here in the Philippines, I would say, that they think that wrestling is just a hobby. Well, it is a hobby now, but if I am able to get on that bigger stage, maybe they would realize, like, oh, hey, if I take this step forward and I have the courage to be, to start being a wrestler, maybe I can get to that place where that person went, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's sad, but it's the reality.
Yeah, but it's also you're part of the grassroots. You're part of the building blocks of that, which I think is admirable. And I think your willingness to travel all around and you know, put yourself out there, I think that's admirable to help build something in the Philippines.
Yeah,
you guys are pioneers. You know, you guys are the ones leading the way. So I people like you and Alexis and other people, you know. I'd love to talk to Gypsy sometimes, but yeah, you guys are the ones that are the building blocks for your countries, and I think it's amazing.
Thank you. That's very nice way to put it.
So
we had it the toughest.
You do. You have it 10 times tougher than any, probably more than 10 times tougher. But one thing I think you do have an advantage of is being a woman. And being bilingual, I think, or speaking English, I think is going to be very helpful for you, because
trilingual.
Yeah. So Tagalog to Japanese, is it very, very different?
I would say, like, okay, the construction of sentences is very different, because, like, okay, Tagalog and English is very similar with the way you construct sentences, because, like, you know, the subject and the verb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really that complicated. But when it comes to Japanese, it's like noun two comes before noun one. So basically, if you say, like, you want to eat, if you want to eat chocolate, you would say, because, like, I want to eat chocolate in English, right? The verb is before. Mm-hmm. But in Japanese, it's like, chocolate o tabemasu. So chocolate to eat, something like that.
Yeah. So Tagalog is similar to English then. So it's very different than the Japanese.
Yeah. But, like, okay, so, like, the because the letters in Japanese are different, but we have the same sounds. Like, we have the same, like, in nani nuneno, we have the same, like, the way we say na. Because, like, the accent is kind of more similar than the way in English. Like, if we say, because the way, apparently, when I speak Japanese, it actually sounds Japanese because of the way I say it. Because when we say na, like na, it's na. But when some Americans say na, it has an accent, you know. It curls a bit. Mm-hmm. But with Filipino, it's very straightforward. And that's the same way Japanese people pronounce the letter. So it's kind of similar, but it's also very different.
So it's also confusing. You're teaching me, because that's why you guys speak Taglish. Is because English and Tagalog have similar sentence structures.
Yeah, basically. Also, that's why I think, because it's engraved in, because I think a few decades ago, the Philippines was conquered by, actually, we were conquered by a lot of countries. Spain, America, Japan. I think that's it. Might be more. But we have a lot of Spanish, like, influence with the food and some words.
Even like your even like your numbers and stuff are in Spanish.
Uno, dos. Yeah. A la seis. So basically 6 o'clock. So yep. Something like that. And then also very because in school we teach Tagalog and English.
So yeah.
Like we have Filipino and then English. English is a subject that you take every year. So like, you know, it's engraved in us. So I think that's why almost every Filipino can speak English. Maybe not well, but they can speak English.
Yeah, and it's interesting that I'm thinking like generations and stuff now too. The younger kids are probably not learning as much Tagalog as they are English almost nowadays.
Yeah, because like, I don't know, a lot of people find the accent not as pleasing. I don't know. It's become like a joke in the Filipino community, I guess.
All right, so I like to ask people, how did COVID affect the Philippines? How have you been affected? Yeah,
it's very bad. I don't want to say anything political, but it's very bad politically.
Yeah.
The health response isn't the best because like you know how in Japan. Or any other country, when they learned that COVID was happening, they already immediately shut down the country from foreign flights. It took us a month before. Actually, you know, it took a positive case before we shut down.
Well, with the U.S. has similar leadership to the Philippines right now.
Yes, we do. And basically, like the Philippines has been experiencing the longest lockdown in Southeast Asia. I think Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia has been free for like 3 months, four months, 2 months now. We're still on lockdown.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
So are stores still closed and things like that over there? Are stores open again?
More like the necessary stores, necessities, basically, yeah. Like the supermarkets. There are some malls open, but the malls are guarded, not guarded heavily. It's more like you have to wear a face shield and a face mask to be able to enter the store. And then, like, when you're entering a store or a mall, like, you have to sign a sheet that says, like, where have you been for the last 2 weeks? Wow. And then they check your temperature. Yeah. So, like, if you've been to, like, out of the country, maybe they won't let you enter. Or, like, if you've been to... you know, the hospital, or you just got out of the hospital, like maybe you won't be able to enter. But basically, they check that. And then a lot of eating places are still closed, but there's a lot of places that are open too. And like most places aren't open for dine-in. Actually, I think like 80% of the places are not open for like, you know, dining in. You have to take it out. Yeah, you have to take away basically. You can't eat at the restaurant.
We in California here, we just recently they only let people sit outside. So people have been setting up like tables and chairs outside for people to sit and eat. Because before it was just takeout only as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Crystal. So
this is hard. It's
yeah.
Hard.
And it's very hard for you. is Jollibee still open?
For delivery.
Oh, that's it. It's for like you can't. Oh, wow. Okay. One of my favorite things to eat in the world is a peach mango pie. Just so you know.
They are really good. But you know how when you get it fresh from the store, it's still hot and nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the chicken, like you know, the Jollibee has very good chicken.
So Chicken Joy. Chicken Joy. Well, let's plug Chicken Joy. Yeah. Chicken
Joy. But yeah, when you're eating at the at the store itself, like it's so nice and hot and juicy. But when it is still different from, like, it's still the same taste, but it's still, like, even if you microwave it for a bit, it's still, like, a different feel. It doesn't feel as fresh or hot. Like, it's not as delicious, right?
your career is kind of on pause right now because of COVID. What are your dreams? What are your aspirations once the world is back to normal? What does Crystal want to do wrestling-wise in her career?
Japan.
Just Japan.
Japan. Like, I mean, I can, like, honestly, I want to go to AEW more than I want to WWE. I'm going to be frank with that, because, like, in AEW, you can still get, like, outside bookings. Like, you know how Riho is still part of Stardom, even though she's a wrestler for AEW. But if you're part of WWE, you just can't go to anywhere else. You're just a WWE superstar. That's why I want to be more in AEW, because at least if I, you know, one day if I do be able to join AEW, I can still, like, receive bookings from, you know, the Philippines or Malaysia or Japan or any place like that. Yeah. But if I join WWE, I'm just going to be stuck there. But yeah. I mean, that's true. Like, you don't see Sasha Banks wrestle for anyone else. You just see Sasha Banks in WWE.
And she teases all the time on social media about wrestling Miko Satomura too. So I'm like, oh, I would love to see her wrestle Miko Satomura. But you know it's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah, because Miko isn't in WWE. But yeah, it's like, if I get to Japan, that would be a dream come true, because at least, you know, wrestling is considered a profession there. Because here in the Philippines, it is just a hobby. And if I can get to, you know, be able to wrestle as much as I can in Japan, build a career over there, and maybe learn Japanese, and maybe my, you know, following would be bigger, and maybe I can get to the state where I can get to the AEW, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, Japan is the shortest goal right now. Maybe the goal, the big goal is the big leagues like AEW or WWE, but Japan is more reachable for me at this point.
Yeah. All right, Crystal, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me at, I'm on Facebook, I'm Facebook page at it's www.facebook.com/crystalpwr, or on Twitter crystalmnl, or on Instagram, which is at I'm Bernie, which is basically my personal Instagram, but I've turned it into like me and Crystal's Instagram into one.
And I'll put all those links in the show notes. So Crystal, again, I want to thank you so much for your time, and you have no idea the influence you had on me. That whole trip last September changed my life. It inspired me to do so many things, and you were part of that. And I really appreciate that. And thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe in the future. And I hope I can see you again in Japan one day after this whole COVID situation.
You might see me in Manila. I might come to a show there. I really want to go to a show in Manila as well. So that's on my bucket list to do, is to go see a show.
Japan.
Yes.
Let's do both. But I feel like Japan is going to be like more realistic, because things in the Philippines, COVID hasn't really died down here. We can't even hold like gatherings, like even a simple birthday party is forbidden.
We're not supposed to either here in America. Yeah, no, it's pretty similar in America right now, there, California at least, because they're like no more than 10 people gathering in one place or this or that. Yeah, it's, but no, I love the Philippines. I love going to the Philippines. I love visiting the Philippines. So I look forward
to maybe when you visit, I will take you out for like a good Filipino dinner or something.
That would be amazing. And then we'll go to the mall for air conditioning.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me in the show. It's been an honor. And also, it's so nice to finally talk to you again. I'm so sorry it took forever for us to speak.
No, it's meant to be. So this came off perfect. So I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.